pineapple rock, lemon plat, butterscotch. A sugar sticky girl shoveling scoopfuls of creams for a Christian brother. Some school treat. Bad for their tummies. Lozenge and comfort manufacturer to His Majesty the King, God save our, sitting on his throne, sucking red jujubes white. A somber YMCA young man, watchful among the warm sweet fumes of grain lemons, placed a throwaway in a hand of Mr. Bloom. Heart to heart talks. Blue? Me? No. Or blood of the lamb. His slow feet walked him riverward, reading, Are you saved? All are washed in the blood of the lamb. God wants blood victims. Birth, hymen, martyr, war, foundation of a building, sacrifice, kidney, burnt offering, druids' altars. Elijah is coming. Dr. John Alexander Dowie, restorer of the church in Zion, is coming. Is coming, is coming, is coming. All heartily welcome. As he set foot on O'Connell Bridge, a puffball of smoke plumed up from the parapet. Brewery barge with export stout, England. Sea air sours it, I heard. Be interesting some day to get a pass through Hancock to see the brewery. Regular world in itself. That's a porter. Wonderful. Rats get in too. Drink themselves bloated as big as a collie floating. Dead drunk on the porter. Drink till they puke again like Christians. Imagine drinking that. Rats. Vats. Well, of course, if we knew all the things. Looking down, he saw, flapping strongly, wheeling between the gaunt quay walls, gulls. Rough weather outside. If I threw myself down. Reuben Jason must have swallowed a good bellyful of that sewage. One and eightpence too much. It's the droll way he comes out with the things. Knows how to tell a story, too. They wheel lower, looking for grub. Wait. He threw down among them a crumpled paper ball. Elijah, 32 feet per second has come. Not a bit. The ball bobbed, unheeded, on the wake of swells, floated under by the bridge piers. Not such damn fools. Also, the day I threw that stale cake out of the Aaron's King, picked it up in the wake 50 yards astern, lived by their wits. They wheeled, flapping. The hungry, famished gull flaps o'er the waters dull. That's how poets write, the similar sounds. But then Shakespeare has no rhymes, blank verse. The flow of the language, it is. The thoughts, solemn. Hamlet, I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain time to walk the earth.
Two apples a penny, two for a penny.
His gaze passed over the glazed apples, serried on her stand. Australians they must be this time of the year. Shiny peels, polishes them with a rag or a handkerchief. Wait, those poor birds. He halted again and bought from the old apple woman 2 Banbury cakes for a penny, and broke the brittle paste and threw its fragments down into the liffey. See that? The gulls swooped silently, 2, then all, from their heights, pouncing on prey. Gone. Every morsel. Aware of their greed and cunning, he shook the powdery crumb from his hands. They never expected that. Manna. Live on fishy flesh they have to. All seabirds, gulls, sea goose. Swans from Analiffy swim down here sometimes to preen themselves. No accounting for tastes. Wonder what kind is swan meat. Robinson Crusoe had to live on them. They wheeled, flapping weakly. I'm not going to throw any more. Penny quite enough. A lot of thanks I get, not even a caw. They spread foot and mouth disease too. If you cram a turkey, say, on chestnut meal, it tastes like that. Eat pig like pig. But then why is it that saltwater fish are not salty? How is that? After 1. Time ball on the ballast office is down. Done sink time. Fascinating little book, that is, of Sir Robert Ball's. Parallax. I never exactly understood. Oh, there's a priest. Could ask him. Par is Greek. Parallel. Parallax. Metempsychosis, she called it. Till I told her about the transmigration. Oh, rocks. Mr. Bloom smiled. Oh, rocks. At 2 windows of the ballast office. She's right, after all. Only big words for ordinary things on account of the sound. She's not exactly witty. Can be rude, too. Blurt out what I was thinking. Still, I don't know. She used to say Ben Dollard had a bass barrel-tone voice. He has legs like barrels, and you think he was singing into a barrel. Now, isn't that wit? They used to call him Big Ben. Not half as witty as calling him bass barrel-tone. Appetite like an albatross. Get outside of a baron of beef. Powerful man he was, at storing away number one bass. Barrel of bass. See? It all works out. He walked along the curbstone. Stream of life. What was the name of that priesty-looking chap was always squinting in when he passed? Weak eyes. Woman. Stopped in Citron's, St. Kevin's Parade. Pen something. Pen... Dennis. My memory's getting... Pen... Of course it's years ago. Noise of the trams, probably. Well, if he couldn't remember the day father's name that he sees every day... Bartell Darcy was the tenor just coming out then. Seen her home after practice. Conceited fellow, with his waxed-up moustache. Gave her that song, Winds That Blow From The South. Windy night that was, I went to fetch her. There was that lodge meeting on, about those lottery tickets after Goodwin's concert in the supper room or oak room at the mansion house. He and I behind. A sheet of her music blew out of my hand against the high school railings. Lucky it didn't. Things like that spoil the effect of a night for her. Professor Goodwin linking her in front, shaky on his pins, poor El Sot. His farewell concerts, positively last appearance on any stage, maybe for months and maybe for never. Remember her laughing at the wind, her blizzard collar up. Corner of Harcourt Road, remember that gust? Vroo, blew up all her skirts, and her boa nearly smothered old Goodwin. She did get flushed in the wind. Remember when we got home, raking up the fire, and frying up those pieces of lap of mutton for her supper with the chutney sauce she liked, and the mulled rum. Could see her in the bedroom from the hearth, unclamping the busk of her stays. White. Swish and soft flop her stays made on the bed. Always warm from her. Always likely to let herself out. Sitting there after, till near two, taking out her hairpins. Millie tucked up in Betty House. Happy. Happy. That was the night.
Oh, Mr. Bloom, how do you do? Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Breen? No use complaining. How is Molly those times? I haven't seen her for ages.
Oh, in the pink, Mr. Bloom said gaily. Millie has a position down in Mullingar, you know.
Oh, go away. Isn't that grand for her?
Yes, and a photographer's there. Getting on like a house on fire. How are all your charges?
Oh, all on the baker's list, Mrs. Breen said.
How many has she? No other in sight.
You're in black, I see. You have no...
No, Mr. Bloom said. I've just come from a funeral. Going to crop up all day, I foresee. Who's dead? When and what did he die of? Turn up like a bad penny.
Oh, dear me, Mrs. Breen said. I hope it wasn't any near relation.
May as well get her sympathy. Dignam, Mr. Bloom said. An old friend of mine. He died quite suddenly, poor fellow. Heart trouble, I believe. Funeral was this morning. Your funeral's tomorrow while you're coming through the rye. Diddle, diddle, dum, dum, diddle, diddle.
Sad to lose the old friends,
Mrs. Breen's woman eyes said melancholily. Now that's quite enough about that. Just quietly, husband. And your lord and master? Mrs. Breen turned up her two large eyes. Hasn't lost them anyhow.
Oh, don't be talking, she said. He's a caution to rattlesnakes. He's in there now with his law books, finding out the law of libel. He has me heart scalded. Wait till I show you.
Opening her handbag. Chipped leather, hat pin. Ought to have a guard on those things. Stick it in a chap's eye in the tram. Rummaging. What is she?
There must be a new moon out, she said. He's always bad then. Do you know what he did last night?
Her hands ceased to rummage. Her eyes fixed themselves on him, wide in alarm, yet smiling. What? Mr. Bloom asked. Let her speak. Look straight in her eyes. I believe you. Trust me.
Woke me up in the night, she said. Dream he had. A nightmare. Said the Ace of Spades was walking up the stairs.
The Ace of Spades? Mr. Bloom said. She took a folded postcard from her handbag.
Read that, she said. He got it this morning.
What is it? Mr. Bloom asked, taking the card. You... P?
U-P, up, she said. Someone taking their rise out of him. It's a great shame for them, whoever he is.
Indeed it is, Mr. Bloom said. She took back the card, sighing.
And now he's gone round to Mr. Manton's office. He's going to take an action for £10,000, he says.
She folded the card into her untidy bag and snapped the catch. Same blue serge dress she had 2 years ago, the nap bleaching, seen its best days. Wispish hair over her ears, and that dowdy toque. 3 old grapes to take the harm out of it. Shabby genteel. She used to be a tasty dresser. Lines around her mouth. Only a year or so older than Molly. Mr. Bloom touched her funny bone gently, warning her, "Mind, let this man pass." A bony form strode along the curbstone from the river, staring with a rapt gaze into the sunlight through a heavy stringed glass. Tight as a skull piece, a tiny hat gripped his head. From his arm, a folded dust coat, a stick and an umbrella dangled to his stride. "Watch him," Mr. Bloom said. "He always walks outside the lampposts. Watch."
"Who is he, if it's a fair question?" Mrs. Breen asked. "Is he Dotty?"
"His name is Cashel Boyle O'Connor Fitzmaurice Tisdall Farrell," Mr. Bloom said, smiling. "Watch."
"He has enough of them," she said. "Dennis to be like that one of these days."
She broke off suddenly.
"There he is," she said. "I must go after him. Goodbye. Remember me to Molly, won't you?"
"I will," Mr. Bloom said. He watched her dodge through passers towards the shop fronts. Dennis Breen, in skimpy frock coat and blue canvas shoes, shuffled out of Harrison's, hugging 2 heavy tomes to his ribs. Blown in from the bay, like old times. He suffered her to overtake him without surprise, and thrust his dull grey beard towards her, his loose jaw wagging as he spoke earnestly. "Meshuggah, office chump." Mr. Bloom walked on again, easily, seeing ahead of him in sunlight the tight skull piece, the dangling stick, umbrella, dust coat. "Going the 2 days? Watch him, out he goes again. One way of getting on in the world. And that other El Mosey lunatic in those duds. Hard times you must have with him. U.P. Up. I'll take my oath that's Alf Bergen or Richie Goulding. Wrote it for a lark in the Scotch house, I bet anything. Round to Menton's office, his oyster eyes staring at the postcard. Be his feast for the gods." He entered Davy Burns. Moral pub, he doesn't chat, stands a drink now and then. But in leap year once in 4. Cashed a cheque for me once. What'll I take now? He drew his watch. Let me see now. Shandy Gaff.
"Hello, Bloom,"
Nosey Flynn said from his nook.
"Hello, Flynn. How's things?"
Tip-top. Let me see. I'll take a glass of burgundy and, let me see, sardines on the shelves. Almost taste them by looking. Sandwich, ham and his descendants, mustard and bread there. Potted meats. What is home without plum trees? Potted meat. Incomplete. What a stupid ad. Under the obituary notices they stuck it. All up a plum tree. Dignam's potted meat. Cannibal's wood with lemon and rice. White missionary too salty. Like pickled pork. Expect the chief consumes the parts of honour. Ought to be tough from exercise. His wives in a row to watch the effect. There was a right royal old nigger who ate or something the somethings of the Reverend Mr. MacTrigger. With it an abode of bliss. Lord knows what concoction. Calls, mouldy tripes, windpipes faked and minced up. Puzzled to find the meat. Kosher. No meat and milk together. Hygiene. That was what they call now. Yom Kippur, fast. Spring cleaning of inside. Peace and war depend on some fellow's digestion. Religions. Christmas turkeys and geese. Slaughter of innocents. Eat, drink, and be merry. Then casual wards full after, heads bandaged. Cheese digests all but itself. Mighty cheese. Have you a cheese sandwich?
Yes, sir.
Like a few olives, too, if they have them. Italian, I prefer. Good glass of burgundy, take away that. Lubricate. A nice salad, cool as a cucumber. Tom Cairn and can dress. Puts gusto into it. Pure olive oil. Millie served me that cutlet with a sprig of parsley. Take one Spanish onion. God made food, the devil the cooks. Devil crab.
Wife well?
Quite well, thanks. A cheese sandwich then, gorgonzola, have you?
Yes, sir.
Nosey Flynn sipped his grog.
Doing any singing those times?
Look at his mouth. Could whistle in his own ear. Flap ears to match. Music. knows as much about it as my coachman. Still better tell him, does no harm. Free ad. She's engaged for a big tour end of this month. You may have heard, perhaps. No, oh, that's the style. Who's getting it up? The curate served. How much is that? 7 days, sir. Thank you, sir. Mr. Bloom cut his sandwich into slender strips. Mr. MacTrigger. Easier than the dreamy, creamy stuff. His 500 wives had the time of their lives. Mustard, sir? Thank you. He studied under each lifted strip, yellow bobs. Their lives. I have it. It grew bigger and bigger and bigger. Getting it up? He said. Well, it's like a company idea, you see. Part shares and part profits. Ah, now I remember, Nosey Flynn said, putting his hand in his pocket to scratch his groin. Who is this was telling me? Isn't Blazes Boylan mixed up in it? A warm shock of air, heat of mustard, haunched on Mr. Bloom's heart. He raised his eyes and met the stare of a bilious clock. Two. Pub clock 5 minutes fast, time going on, hands moving. Two. Not yet. His midriff yearned then upward, sank within him, yearned more longingly. Wine. He smell-sipped the cordial juice, and bidding his throat strongly to speed it, set his wine-glass delicately down. Yes, he said. He's the organizer, in point of fact. No fear, no brains. Nosey Flynn snuffled and scratched, Flea having a good square meal. He had a good slice of luck, Jack Mooney was telling me over that boxing match Moira Kerr won. Again, that soldier in the Portobello barracks. Boy God, he had the little kipper down in the County Carlow, he was telling me.
Hope that dewdrop doesn't come down into his glass.
No, snuffled it up.
For near a month, man, before I came off. Sucking duck eggs, be God, to further orders. Keep him off the booze, see. Oh, boy God, Blazes is a hairy chap.
Davy Byrne came forward from the hind bar, in tuck-stitched shirt sleeves, cleaning his lips with two wipes of his napkin. Herring's blush, whose smile upon each feature plays with such and such replete. Too much fat on the parsnips.
Ah, here's himself and pepper on him, Nosey Flynn said. Can you give us a good one for the gold cup?
Oh, I'm off that, Mr. Flynn, Davy Byrne answered. I never put anything on a horse.
You're right there, Nosey Flynn said.
Mr. Bloom ate his strips of sandwich, fresh clean bread, with relish of disgust, pungent mustard, the feety savour of green cheese. Sips of his wine soothed his palate. Not logwood, that. Tastes fuller this weather, with the chill off. Ah, nice quiet bar. Nice piece of wood in that counter. Nicely planed. Like the way it curves there.
I wouldn't do anything at all in that line, David Byrne said. It ruined many a man, the same horses.
Vintner's sweepstake, license for the sale of beer, wine, and spirits for consumption on the premises. Heads I win, tails you lose.
All true for you, Nosey Flynn said, unless you're in the know. There's no straight sport going now. Lenehan gets some good ones. He's given Scepter today. Zinfandel's the favourite. Lord Howard the Walton's, won at Epsom. Morney Cannon is riding him. I could have got 7-1 against St. Amant's a fortnight before.
That's so, Davy Byrne said. He went towards the window, and taking up the petty cash book, scanned its pages.
I could, faith,
Nosey Flynn said, snuffling.
That was a rare bit of horse flesh. St. Frusquin was her sire. She won in a thunderstorm. Rothschild's filly, with Watton in her ears. Blue jacket and yellow cap. Bad luck to Big Ben Dollard and his John o' Gaunt. He put me off it, aye.
He drank resignedly from his tumbler, running his fingers down the flutes.
Aye,
he said, sighing. Mr. Bloom, champing, standing, looked upon his sigh. Nosey numbskull.
Will I tell him that horse Lenehan?
No, he knows already.
Better let him forget. Go and lose more, fooling his money. Dewdrop coming down again.
Cold nose he'd have, kissing a woman. Still, they might like. Prickly beards they like. Dogs' cold noses. Old Mrs. Reardon with the rumbling stomach Skye Terrier in the City Arms Hotel. Molly fondling him in her lap. Oh, the big doggy bow-wow-wowsy. Wine-soaked and softened, rolled pith of bread, mustard a moment, mawkish cheese. Nice wine it is. Tasted better because I'm not thirsty. Bath, of course, does that. Just a bite or two, then about 6 o'clock I can... Six.
time will be gone then. She. Mild fire of wine kindled his veins. I wanted that badly. It felt so off color.
Stuck on the pane, two flies buzzed, stuck. Glowing wine on his palate, lingered, swallowed, crushing in the wine-press grapes of Burgundy. Sun's heat it is, seems to a secret touch, telling me memory. Touched, his sense moistened, remembered. Hidden under wild ferns on Hoth, below us bay, sleeping sky, no sound, the sky, the bay purple by the lion's head, green by Drumleck, yellow-green towards Sutton, fields of undersea, the lines faint brown in grass, buried cities. Pillowed on my coat she had her hair, earwigs in the heather scrub, my hand under her nape. You'll toss me all. Oh, wonder. Cool soft with ointments her hand touched me, caressed. Her eyes upon me did not turn away. Ravished over her I lay, full lips, full open, kissed her mouth. Yum. Softly she gave me, in my mouth, the seed cake, warm and chewed. Mawkish pulp her mouth had mumbled sweet and sour with spittle. Joy. I ate it. Joy. Young life, her lips that gave me, pouting. Soft, warm, sticky gum-jelly lips. Flowers her eyes were. Take me, willing eyes. Pebbles fell. She lay still. A goat. No one. High on Ben Hoth, rhododendrons, a nanny goat walking sure-footed, dropping currants. Screened under ferns, she laughed, warm-folded. Wildly I lay on her, kissed her eyes, her lips, her stretched neck, beating, woman's breasts full in her blouse of nun's veiling, fat nipples upright, hot I tongued her. She kissed me, I was kissed, all yielding she tossed my hair, kissed, she kissed me. Me. And me now. Stuck. The flies buzzed.
I was just passing the time of day with old Troy of the DMP at the corner of Arbor Hill there, and be damned, but a bloody sweep came along, and he near drove his gear into me eye. I turned around to let him have the weight of me tongue, when who should I see, dodging along Stony Batter, only Joe Hines. "Lo, Joe," says I, "how are you blowing? Did you see that bloody chimney sweep near shoved me eye out with his brush?" "Such luck," says Joe. "Who's the old bollocks you were talking to?" "Old Troy," says I, "was in the force. I'm on two minds not to give that fella in charge for obstructing the thoroughfare with his brooms and ladders." "What are you doing around these parts?" says Joe. "Divil a much," says I. "There's a bloody big foxy thief beyond by the garrison church at the corner of Chicken Lane. Old Troy was just giving me a wrinkle about it. Lifted any God's quantity of tea and sugar to pay 3 bob a week. Said he had a farm in the county down. Off a hop of me thumb by the name of Moses Herzog over there near Haydesbury Street." "Circumcised," says Joe. "Aye," says I, "a bit off the top. An old plumber named Geraghty. I'm hanging on to his toenail for the past fortnight, and I can't get a penny out of him." "That the lay you're on now?" says Joe. "Aye," says I. "How are the mighty fallen? Collector of bad and doubtful debts. But that's the most notorious bloody robber you'd meet in a day's walk. And the face on him, all pockmarks, would hold a share of rain. Tell him, says he, I dare him, says he, and I double dare him to send you round here again. Or if he does, says he, I'll have him summoned up before the court, so will I, for trading without a licence. And he after stuffing himself in his fifth of post. Jesus, I had to laugh at the little Jewy getting his shirt out. He drink me my teas, he eat me my sugars, because he now pays me my money. Are you a strict TT, says Joe. Not taking anything between drinks, says I. What about paying our respects to our friend, says Joe. Who, says I. Sure, he's in John of God's, off his head, poor man. Drinking his own stuff, says Joe. Aye, says I. Whiskey and water on the brain. Come around to Barney Kiernan, says Joe. I want to see the citizen. Barney Mavorin's beat, says I. Anything strange or wonderful, Joe? Oh, not a word, says Joe. I was up at that meeting of the City Arms. What was that, Joe, says I. Cattle trader, says Joe, about the foot and mouth disease. I want to give the citizen the hard word about it. So we went around by the linen hall barracks and the back of the courthouse, talking of one thing or another. Decent fella, Joe, when he has it. But sure like that, he never has it. Jesus, I couldn't get over that bloody Foxy Geraghty, the daylight robber, for trading without a license, says he. So we turned into Barney Kiernan's, and there sure enough was the citizen, up in the corner, having a great confab with himself, and that bloody mangy mongrel, Gary Owen, and he waiting for what the sky would drop in the way of a drink. There he is, says I, in his glory hole with his cruishkeen lawn and his load of papers, working for the cause. The bloody mongrel let a grouse out of him, would give it the creeps. Be a corporate work of mercy if someone would take the life of that bloody dog. I'm told for a fact he ate a good part of the breeches off a constabulary man in Santry that came round one time with blue papers about a licence. Stand and deliver, says he. That's all right, citizen, says Joe. Friends here. Past friends, says he. Then he rubs his hand in his eye and says he, what's your opinion of the Times doing the rapparee in Rory of the Hill? But be gob, Joe was equal to the occasion. I think the markets are on a rise, says he, sliding his hand down his fork. So big up the citizen claps his paw on his knee and says, foreign wars is the cause of it. And says Joe, sticking his thumb in his pocket, it's the Russians wish to tyrannise. Arra give over your bloody cotton, Joe, says I. I've a thirst on me. I wouldn't sell for half a crown. Give it a name, citizen, says Joe. Wine of the country, says he. What's yours, says Joe. Ditto McInaspy, says I. 3 points, Terry, says Joe. And how's the old heart, citizen, says he. Oh, never better, O'Carra, says he. What, Gary? Are we going to win, eh? And with that, he took the bloody old towser by the scruff of the neck, and by Jesus, he nearly throttled him. So anyhow, Terry brought the 3 points. Joe was standing, and big up, the sight nearly left me eyes when I saw him land out a quid. I was through, as I'm telling you, a good-looking sovereign. And there's more where that came from, says he. Were you robbing the poor box, Joe, says I. Sweat in me brow, says Joe. 'Twas the prudent member gave me the wheeze. I saw him before I met you, says I, sloping around Pill Lane and Greek Street with his cod's eye, counting up all the guts of the fish. Help, Joe, says I. And all down the farm. Ah. Oh, don't be talking. I was blue mouthy for the want of that point. Declare to God I could hear it hit the pit of my stomach with a click. Little Alf Bergen popped in around the door and hid behind Barney snug, squeezed up with the laughing. And who was sitting there in the corner that I hadn't seen, snorting drunk, blind to the world, only Bob Dorden. I didn't know what was up, and Alf kept making signs out of the door. And be gob, what was it? Only that bloody old pantaloon Dennis Breen in his bath slippers, with two bloody big books tucked under his oxter, and the wife hot foot after him, unfortunate wretched woman, trotting like a poodle. I thought Alf would split. Look at him, says he. Breen, he's traipsing all around Dublin with the postcard someone sent him with UP up on it to take a life. And he doubled up. Take a what, says I? A libel action, says he, for £10,000. Oh, hell, says I. The bloody mongrel began to growl. That'd put the fear of God in you, seeing something was up, but the citizen gave him a kick in the ribs. Be a little hushed, says he. Who? Says Joe. Breen, says Alf. He was in John Henry Menton's, and then he went round to Collis and Ward's, and then Tom Rochford met him and sent him round to the sub-sheriffs for a lark. Oh, God, of a pain laughing. UP, up. The long fella gave him an oi as good as a process, and now the bloody old lunatic has gone around to Green Street looking for a G-man. "When is Long John going to hang that fella in Mountjoy?" says Joe. "Bergen," says Bob Dorden, waking up. "Is that Alf Bergen?" "Yes," says Alf. "Hanging? Wait till I show you. Here, Perry, give us a pony." "That bloody hell, Phil. £10,000. You should have seen Long John's eye. U P." And he started laughing. "What are you laughing at?" says Bob Dorn. "Is that Bergen?" "Hurry up, Terry boy," says Alf. "What's that bloody Freemason doing?" says the citizen, prowling up and down outside. "What's that?" says Joe. "Here you are," says Alf, chucking out the rhino. "Talking about hanging, I'll show you something you never saw. Hangmen's letters. Look at here." So he took a bundle of wisps of letters and envelopes out of his pocket. "You're cotton," says I. "Honest Injun," says Alf. "Read them." So Joe took up the letters. "Who are you laughing at?" says Bob Dorden. So I saw there was going to be a bit of a dust. Bob's a queer chap when the porter's up in him. So, says I, just to make talk, "How's Willie Murray these times, Alf?" "I don't know," says Alf. "I saw him just now in Capel Street with Paddy Dignam, only I was running after that." "You what?" says Joe, throwing down the letters. "With who?" "With Dignam," says Alf. "Is it Paddy?" says Joe. "Yes," says Alf. "Why?" "Don't you know he's dead?" says Joe. "Paddy Dignam dead?" says Alf. "Aye," says Joe. "Sure, I'm after seeing him not 5 minutes ago," says Alf, "as plain as a pikestaff." "Who's dead?" says Bob Doran. "You saw his ghost then," says Joe. "God between us and harm." "What?" says Alf. "Good Christ, only foot, what? And Willie Murray with him, and the two of them there near whatchamacallums." "What? Dignam dead?" "What about Dignam?" says Bob Dorden. "Who's talking about dead?" says Alf. "He's no more dead than you are." "Maybe so," says Joe. "They took the liberty of burying him this morning anyhow." "Paddy?" says Alf. "Aye," says Joe. "He paid the debt of nature. God be merciful to him." "Good Christ," says Alf. "Be gob, he was what you might call flabbergasted." "There he is again," says the citizen, staring out. "Who?" says I. "Bloom," says he. "He's on point duty up and down there for the last 10 minutes. And be gob, I saw his fizzog do a peep in and then slither off again. Little Alf was knocked always. Faith he was. "Good Christ," says he. "I could have sworn it was him." And says Bob Doran, with a hat on the back of his pole, lowest blackguard in Dublin when he's under the influence. "Who said Christ is good?" "I beg your parsnips," says Alf. "Is that a good Christ," says Bob Doran, "to take away poor little Willie Dignam?" "Ah, well," says Alf, trying to pass it off, "he's over all his troubles." But Bob Dorden shouts out of him, "He's a bloody ruffian, I say, to take away poor little Willie Dignam." Terry came down and tipped him the wink to keep quiet, that they didn't want that kind of talk in a respectable licensed premises. And Bob Dorden starts doing the weeps about Paddy Dignam, true as you're there. "The finest man," says he, snivelling. "The finest, purest character." "The tear is bloody near your eye," talking through his bloody hat. "Fitter for him to go home to the little sleepwalking bitch he married. Mooney, the bum bailiff's daughter. Mother kept a kip in Hardwick Street. They used to be surveying about the landings. Bantam Lyons told me that was stopping there. At 2 in the morning, without a stitch on her, exposing her person, open to all comers, fair field and no favour. The noblest, the truest," says he. "And he's gone. Poor little Willie. Poor little Paddy Dignam." Old Gary Owen started growling again at Bloom that was skeezing round the door. "Come in, come on, he won't hate you," says the citizen. So Bloom slogs in with his cod's eye on the dog and he asks Terry, "Was Martin Cunningham there?" "Oh, Christ, McJohn," says Joe, reading one of the letters. "Listen to this, will you?" And he starts reading out one. 7 Hunter Street, Liverpool. "To the High Sheriff of Dublin, Dublin. Honoured Sir, I beg to offer my services in the above-mentioned painful case. I hanged Joe Gann in Bootle Jail on the 12th of February, 1900, and I hanged..." "Show us, Joe," says I. "Private Arthur Chase for foul murder of Jesse Tilsett in Pentonville Prison, and I was assisting when..." "Jesus," says I. "Billington executed the awful murderer, Toad Smith." The citizen made a grab at the letter. "Hold hard," says Joe. "I have a special knack of putting the noose once in he can't get out, hoping to be favoured or remain honoured, sir. My terms is 5 guineas, H. Rumbold, Master Barber." "And a barbarous bloody barbarian he is too," says the citizen. "And the dirty scrawl of the wretch," says Joe. "Here," says he, "take them to hell out of my sight, Alf." "Hello, Bloom," says he. "What'll you have?" So they started arguing about the point, Bloom saying he wouldn't and he couldn't and excuse him, no offence and all to that. And then he said, well, he'd just take a cigar. God, he's a prudent member and no mistake. Give us one of your prime stinkers, Terry, says Joe. And Alf was telling us there was one chap sent in a mourning card with a black border around it. They're all barbers, you see, from the black country that would hang their own fathers for £5 down and travelling expenses. And he was telling us there's two fellas waiting below to pull his heels down when he gets the drop and choke him properly. And then they chop up the rope after and sell the bits for a few bob a school. So they started talking about capital punishment, and of course Bloom comes out with the why and the wherefore and all the codology of the business, and the old dog smelling them all the time. I'm told those Deweys does have a sort of a queer odour coming off them for dogs. About, I don't know what, all the deterrent effect and so forth and so on. There's one thing it hasn't a deterrent effect on, says Alf. What's that, says Joe? The poor bugger's tool that's been hanged, says Alf. That's so, says Joe. God's truth, says Alf. I heard that from the head warder that was in Kilmainham when they hanged Joe Brady, the Invincible. He told me when they cut him down after the drop, it was standing up in their faces like a poker. Rule in passion, strong in death, says Joe, as someone said. Oh, that can be explained by science, says Bloom. It's only a natural phenomenon, don't you see? Because on account of that... And then he starts with his jawbreakers about phenomenon and science and this phenomenon and the other phenomenon. So, of course, the citizen was only waiting for the wink of the word, and he starts gassing out of him about the Invincibles and the Old Guard and the Men of 67 and Who Fears to Speak in 98 and Joe with him about all the fellas that were hanged, drawn and transported for the cause by Drumhead Court-Martial and a New Ireland and New this, that and the other. Talking about New Ireland, he ought to go and get a new dog, so he ought. Mangy, ravenous brute, sniffling and sneezing all over the place and scratching his scabs. And round he goes to Bob Dorden, that was standing out for half one, sucking up for what he could get. So, of course, Bob Dorden starts doing the bloody fool with him. Give us the paw. Give us the paw, doggy. Good old doggy. Give us the paw here. Give us the paw. Arab bloody end of the paw. He'd paw. And Alf trying to keep him from tumbling off the bloody stool atop of the bloody old dog. And he talking all kinds of drivel about training by kindness and thoroughbred dog and intelligent dog. Give you the bloody pip. Then he starts scraping a few bits of old biscuit out of the bottom of a Jacob's tin he told Terry to bring. Gobby galloped it down like old boots and his tongue hanging out of him a yard long for more. Near at the tin and all, hungry bloody mongrel. The memory of the dead, says the citizen, taking up his point glass and glaring at Bloom. Aye, aye, says Joe. You don't grasp my point, says Bloom. What I mean is Sinn Féin, says the citizen. Sinn Féin a wine. The friends we love are by our side, and the foes we hate before us. So, however, as I was saying, the old dog, seeing the tin was empty, starts mousing around by Joe and me. I'd train him by kindness, though I would, if he was my dog, give him a rousing fine kick now and again where they wouldn't blind him. Afraid he'd bite you, says the citizen, sneering. No, says I, but he might take me leg for a lamppost. So he calls the old dog over. What's on you, Gary, says he. Then he starts hauling and mauling and talking to him in Irish, and the old towels are growling, letting on to answer, like a duet in the opera. Such growling you never heard, as they let off between them. Someone that has nothing better to do ought to write a letter pro bono publico to the papers about the Muslin order for a dog the like of that. Growling and grousing, and his eye all bloodshot from the drought is in it, and the hydrophobia dropping out of his jaws. So, he told Terry to bring some water for the dog, and gob, you could hear him lapping it up a mile off. And Joe asked him, would he have another? I will, says he, Yacara, to show there's no ill feeling. God, he's not as green as his cabbage looking. Arsing around from one pub to another, leaving it to your own honour, with old Giltrap's dog, and getting fed up by the ratepayers and the corporators. Entertainment for man and beast, answers Joe. Could you make a hole in another point? Could a swim duck, says I. Same again, Terry, says Joe. And you sure you won't have anything in the way of liquid refreshments, says he. Thank you, no, says Bloom. As a matter of fact, I just wanted to meet Martin Cunningham, don't you see, about this insurance of poor Dignam's. Martin asked me to go to the house. You see, he, Dignam I mean, didn't serve any notice of the assignment on the company at the time, and nominally, under the Act, the mortgagee can't recover on the policy.
Holy wars, says Joe, laughing. That's a good one, if old Shylock has landed. So the wife comes out top dog, what?
Well, that's the point, says Bloom, for the wife's admirers.
Who's admirers, says Joe?
The wife's advisers, I mean, says Bloom. Then he starts all confused, mucking it up about the mortgagor under the Act, like the Lord Chancellor giving it out on the bench, and for the benefit of the wife, and that a trust it's created, but on the other hand, that Dignam owed Bridgman the money, and if now the wife or widow contested the mortgagee's right, till he near had the head of me addled with his mortgagor under the Act.
So, Terry brought the 3 points. Here, says Joe, doing the honours. Here, citizen. Slong lad, says he. Fortune, Joe, says I. Good health, citizen. Cop, he had his mouth halfway down the tumbler already.
What a small fortune to keep him in drinks.
Who was the long fella running for the mayoralty, Alf, says Joe.
Friend of yours, says Alf.
Nannan, says Joe, the member.
I won't mention any names, says Alf.
I thought so, says Joe. I saw him up at that meeting now with William Field, MP, the cattle traders.
Harry Yopus, says the citizen. That exploded volcano, the darling of all countries and the idol of his own.
So, Joe starts telling the citizen about the foot and mouth disease and the cattle traders and taking action in the matter and the citizen sending them all to the right about. And Bloom coming out with his sheep dip for the scab and a hoose trench for coughing calves and the guaranteed remedy for timber tongue. Any else is Joe. Fields and Nannetti are going over tonight to London to ask about it on the floor of the House of Commons.
Are you sure? Says Bloom. The councillor is gone. I wanted to see him, as it happens.
Well, he's gone off by the mailboat, says Joe.
Tonight? That's too bad, says Bloom. I wanted particularly. Perhaps only Mr. Fields gone. I couldn't phone.
No, you're sure? Nannan's gone too, says Joe. The League told him to ask a question tomorrow about the Commissioner of Police forbidding Irish games in the park. What do you think of that, citizen? The slew and the heron.
Ah, no, Bucklesh, says the citizen, letting on to be modest.
There was a time I was as good as the next fella, anyhow.
Put it there, citizen, says Joe. You were, and a bloody sight better.
Is that really a fact, says Alf.
Yes, says Bloom, that's well known.
Do you not know that?
So off they started, about Irish sport, and shown-in games the like of lawn tennis, and about hurley, and putting the stone, and racing of the soil, and building up a nation once again and all that. And of course Bloom had to have his say too, about if a fella had a rower's heart, violent exercise was bad.
I declare to me, Auntie Macassar, if you took up a straw from the bloody floor, and if you said to Bloom, look at Bloom, do you see that straw? That's a straw. Declare to me, aunt, he'd talk about it for an hour, so he would, and talk steady.
Talking about violent exercise, says Alf.
Were you at the Cole Bennett match?
No, says Joe.
I heard so-and-so made a cool 100 quid over it, says Alf.
Who? Blazes, says Joe.
And says Bloom, what I meant about tennis, for example, is the agility and training of the eye.
Aye, blazes, says Alf.
He let out that Moiler was on the beer to run the odds, and he's swatting all the time.
We know him, says the citizen, the traitor's son.
We know what put English gold in his pocket.
Through fire, says Joe.
And Bloom cuts in again about lawn tennis and the circulation of the blood, asking Alf, now don't you think, Bergen?
Moiler dusted the floor with him, says Alf.
Heenan and Sayers was only a bloody fool to it, handed him the father and mother of a beating. See the little kipper not up to his navel, and the big fella swiping. God, he gave him one last puck in the wind.
Queensberry rules and all. Made him puke what he never ate.
He knows which side his bread is buttered, says Alf. Or here he's running a concert tour up in the north.
He is, says Joe, isn't he?
Who? Says Bloom.
Ah, yes, that's quite true. Yes, a kind of summer tour, you see. Just a holiday.
Mrs. B is the bright particular star, isn't she? Says Joe.
And my wife, says Bloom. She's singing, yes, I think it'll be a success too. He's an excellent man to organise, excellent.
Oh, be God, says I to myself, says I. That explains the milk in the coconut and absence of hair on the animal's chest. Blazes down the tootle on the flute.
Concert tour. Dirty Dan, the Dodger's son off Oiling Bridge that sold the same horses twice over to the government to fight the Boers.
Oh, what?
I called about the poor and water rat, Mr. Barlin. You what? The water rat, Mr. Barlin. You what, what?
That's the buckle that'll organise her. Take my tip. Twixt me and you, Catherish. So anyhow, in come John Moyes Nolan and Lenehan with him, with a face on him, as long as a late breakfast. What's up with you? Says I to Lenehan. You look like a fella that lost the bob and found a tanner. Gold cup, says he. Who won, Mr. Lenehan? Says Terry. Throwaway, says he, a 20-1, a rank outsider, and the rest nowhere. And Bass's mare, says Terry, still running, says he. We're all in a cart. Boylan plunged £2 in my tip scepter for himself and a lady friend. I'd half a crown myself, says Terry, on Zinfandel that Mr. Flynn gave me. Lord Howard of Walden's. 20-1, says Lenehan. Such is life in an outhouse. Throwaway, says he. Takes the biscuit and talking about bunions. Frailty, thy name is scepter. So he went over to the biscuit tin Bob Doran left to see if there was anything he could lift on the nod. The old cur after him, back in his luck with his mangy snout up. Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard. Not there, my child, says he. Keep your pecker up, says Joe. She'd have won the money, only for the other dog. Will you try another, citizen, says Joe. Yes, sir, says he, I will. You, says Joe, beholden to you, Joe, says I. May your shadow never grow less. Repeat the dose, says Joe. Bloom was talking and talking to John Moyes, and he quite excited, with his dun-duckety mud-coloured mug on him and his old plum eyes rolling about. Persecution, says he, all the history of the world is full of it, perpetuating national hatred among nations. But do you know what a nation means? Says John Moyes. Yes, says Bloom. What is it? Says John Moyes. A nation, says Bloom. A nation is the same people living in the same place. Be God then, says Ned, laughing, if that's so, I'm a nation, for I'm living in the same place for the past 5 years. So, of course, everyone had a laugh at Bloom, and says he, trying to muck out of it, are also living in different places. That covers my case, says Joe. What is your nation, if I may ask, says the citizen. Ireland, says Bloom. I was born here. Ireland. The citizen said nothing, only cleared the spit out of his gullet, and gob, he spat a red bank oyster out of him, right in the corner. After you with the push, Joe, says he, taking out his handkerchief to swab himself dry. Here you are, citizen, says Joe. Take that in your right hand and repeat after me the following words. Shove us over the drinks, says I. Which is which? That's mine, says Joe, as the devil said to the dead policeman. And I belong to a race too, says Bloom, that is hated and persecuted, also now, this very moment, this very instant. God, he near burnt his fingers with the butt of his old cigar. Robbed, says he, plundered, insulted, persecuted, taken what belongs to us by right. At this very moment, says he, putting up his fist, sold by auction off in Morocco like slaves or cattle. Are you talking about the New Jerusalem? Says the citizen. I'm talking about injustice, says Bloom. Right, says John Moyes. Stand up to it then with force, like men. That's an almanac picture for you. Mark for a soft-nosed bullet. Old lardy face standing up to the business end of a gun. Gobby did own a sweeping brush, so he would, if only he had a nurse's apron on him. And then he collapses all of a sudden, twisting around all the opposite, as limp as a wet rag. But it's no use, says he. Force, hatred, history, all that, that's not life for men and women. Insult and hatred. And everybody knows that it's the very opposite of that that is really life. What? Says Alf. Love, says Bloom. I mean the opposite of hatred. I must go now, says he to John Moyes. Just round to the court a moment to see if Martin is there. If he comes, just say I'll be back in a second. Just a moment. Who's hindering you? And off he pops, like greased lightning. And you apostles to the Gentiles, says the citizen. Universal love. Well, says John Moyes, isn't that what we're told? Love your neighbours. That chap, says the citizen. Beggar me neighbour is his motto. Love Moya. He's a nice Patterton of a Romeo and Juliet. Well, Joe, says I, your very good health and song. More power, citizen. Hurrah there, says Joe. The blessing of God and Mary and Patrick on you, says the citizen. And he ups with his point to wet his whistle. I know where he's gone, says Lenehan, cracking his fingers. Who, says I? Bloom, says he. The courthouse is a blind. He had a few bob on throwaway, and he's gone to gather in the shekels. Is it that white-eyed Kaffir, says the citizen, that never backed a horse in anger in his life? That's where he's gone, says Lenehan. I met Bantam Lyons going to back the horse, only I put him off it, and he told me Bloom gave him the tip. Bet you what you like. He has 100 shillings to five on. He's the only man in Dublin has it. A dark horse. He's a bloody dark horse himself, says Joe. Mind, Joe, says I. Show us the entrance out. There you are, says Terry. Good boy, Ireland, I'm going to Gort. So I just went round to the back of the yard to pump ship, and begob, 100 shillings to five. While I was letting off me throwaway, 22, letting off me load, Gov says I to myself, I knew he was uneasy in his 2 points off of Joe, and one in Slattery's off, in his mind to get off the mark to 100 shillings is 5 quid. And when they were in the dark horse, Pisser Bourke was telling me card party, and letting on the child was sick. Gov must have done about a gallon. Flabby arse of a wife, speaking down the tube, she's better, or she's, oh. All of a plan so we could vamoose with the pool if he won, or, Jesus, full up I was. Trading without a license, ow. Ireland, my nation, says he. Oh, never up to those bloody, ah, oh, there's the last of it. Jerusalem, cuckoos. So anyhow, when I got back, they were at it, ding-dong. John Boyes saying it was Bloom gave the idea for Sinn Féin to Griffith to put in his paper all kinds of gerrymandered and packed juries and swindling the taxes off the government and appointing consuls all over the world to walk about selling Irish industries, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Gob, that puts the bloody kibosh on it. If old Sloppy Eyes is mucking up the show, give us a bloody chance. God save Ireland from the likes of that bloody mouse about Mr. Bloom with his argol bargol, and his elfella before him perpetuating frauds, El Methuselah Bloom, the robin bagman, that poisoned himself with the prussic acid after he swamping the country with his baubles and his penny diamonds. Loans by post on easy terms, any amount of money advanced on note of hand. Distance no object, no security. Gobby's like Manty MacHale's goat that'd go a piece of the road with everyone. Well, it's a fact, says John Boyes, and there's the man now that'll tell you about it, Martin Cunningham. Sure enough, the castle car drove up with Martin on it, and Jack Power with him, and a fella named Crofter, or Crofton, pensioner, out of the Collector's Generals, an orange man Blackburn does have on the registration, and he'd drawn his pay, of Crawford, gallivanting around the country at the King's expense. So in comes Martin, asking where was Bloom. Where is he, says Lenehan, defrauding widows and orphans. Isn't that a fact, says John Boyes? What I was telling the citizen about Bloom and Sinn Féin. Oh, that's so, says Martin. Or so they allege. Who made these allegations, says Alf. I, says Joe, I'm the alligator. And after all that, says John Boyes, why can't a Jew love his country like the next fella? Why not, says JJ, when he's quite sure which country it is? Is he a Jew or a Gentile or a Holy Roman or a swaddler or what the hell is he, says Ned. Or who is he? No offence, Crofton. We don't want him, says Crofter, the Orangeman or Presbyterian. Who is Junius, says JJ. He's a perverted Jew, says Martin, from a place in Hungary, and it was he drew up all the plans according to the Hungarian system. We know that in the castle. Isn't he a cousin of Bloom the dentist, says Jack Power. Not at all, says Martin, only namesakes. His name was Virag, the father's name that poisoned himself. He changed it by deed poll, the father did. That's the new Messiah for Ireland, says the citizen. Ireland of saints and sages. Well, they're still waiting for their Redeemer, says Martin. For that matter, so are we. Yes, says JJ, and every male that's born, they think it may be their Messiah. And every Jew is in a tall state of excitement, I believe, till he knows if he's a father or a mother. Expecting every moment will be his next, says Lenehan. Ah, boy God, says Ned. You should have seen Bloom before that son of his that died was born. I met him one day in the South City markets buying a tin of Neve's food 6 weeks before the wife was delivered. En ventre sa mère, says JJ. Do you call that a man, says the citizen. I wonder did he ever put it out of sight, says Joe. Well, there were two children born anyhow, says Jack Power. And who does he suspect, says the citizen. God, there's many a true word spoken in jest. One of those mixed middling he is. Lying up in the hotel, Pisser was telling me, once a month with headache, like a totty with her courses. Don't I'm telling you, it'd be an act of God to take a hold of the fella the like of that and throw him in the bloody sea. Justifiable homicide, so it would. Then sloping off with his 5 quid without putting up a point of stuff like a man. Give us your blessing, not as much as would blind your eye. Charity to the neighbour, says Martin. But where is he? We can't wait.
A wolf in sheep's clothing, says the citizen. That's what he is. Virag from Hungary. Ahasuerus, I call him. Cursed by God.
Have you time for a brief libation, Martin, says Ned. Only one, says Martin. We must be quick. JJNS. You, Jack, Crofton. Three half ones, Terry.
St. Patrick would want to land again at Ballykindler and convert us, says the citizen, after allowing things like that to contaminate our shores.
Well, says Martin, rapping for his glass, God bless all here is my prayer.
Amen, says the citizen.
And I'm sure he will, says Joe. And so say all of us, says Jack.
Thousand a year, Lambert, says Crofton, or Crawford.
Right, says Ned, taking up his John Jemison, and butter for fish.
I was just looking round to see who the happy thought would strike, when be damned, but in he comes again, letting on to be in a hell of a hurry.
I was just around at the courthouse, says he, looking for you. I hope I'm not.
No, says Martin, we're ready. Courthouse, my eye, and your pockets hanging down with gold and silver, mean bloody scut. Stand as a drink itself. Oh, divil a sweet fare.
There's a Jew for you, all for number one. Cute as a shithouse rat. 105.
Don't tell anyone, says the citizen.
I beg your pardon, says he.
Come on, boy, says Martin, seeing it was looking blue. Come along now. Don't tell anyone, says the citizen, letting the ball out of him. It's a secret.
And the bloody dog woke up and let a growl.
Boy, by all, says Martin. And he got them out as quick as he could. Jack Power and Crofton, or whatever you call them, and him in the middle of them, letting on to be all at sea. Up with them on the bloody janting car. Off with you, says Martin, to the Jarvie.
But be gone. I was just lowered in the heel of the point when I saw the citizen getting up to waddle to the door, puffing and blowing with the dropsy, and he cursing the curse of Cromwell on him, bell, book and candle, in Irish, spitting and spatting out of him, and Joe and little Alf round him like a leprechaun, trying to pacify him.
Let me alone, says he. And be gob, he got as far as the door, and they holding him, and he bawls out of him, three cheers for Israel.
Harris, sit down on that parliamentary side of your ass for Christ's sake and don't be making a public exhibition of yourself. Jesus, always some bloody clown or other kicking up bloody murder about bloody nothing. God, but it turned the porter star in your gut, so it would. And all the ragamuffins and sluts of the nation round the door, and Martin telling the Jarvie to drive ahead, and the citizen bawling, and Alf and Joe at him to whisht, and he on his high horse about the Jews, and the loaf was calling for his speech, and Jack Power trying to get him to sit down on the car and hold his bloody jaw, and the loafer with a patch over his eyes starts singing, if the man in the moon was a Jew, 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 and the slut shouts out of her, hey, mister, your fly is open, mister, and says he, Mendelssohn was a Jew, and Karl Marx, and Mercadante, and Spinoza, and the Saviour was a Jew, and his father was a Jew. Your God!
He had no father, says Martin. That'll do now. Drive ahead.
Who's God? Says the citizen.
Well, his uncle was a Jew, says he. Your God was a Jew. Christ was a Jew, like me.
God, the citizen, made a plunge back into the shop.
By Jesus, says he, I'll brain that bloody Jew man for using the holy name.
By Jesus, I'll crucify him, so I will. Give us that biscuit box here. Stop, stop, says Joe.
God, the devil wouldn't stop him till he got hold of the bloody tin anyhow. And out with him, and little Alf hanging onto his elbow. And he's shouting like a stuck pig, as good as any bloody play in the Queen's Royal Theatre. Where is he till I murder him?
And Ned and J.G. paralysed with a laughing. Bloody war, says I. I'll be in for the last gospel.
But, as luck would have it, the Jarvie got the nag's head round the other way and off with him.
Hold on, citizens, says Joe. Stop.
Begob, he drew his hands and made a swipe and let fly.
Mercy of God, the sun was in his eyes, or he'd have left him for dead.
Gobby near sent it into the county Longford.
The bloody nag took fright, and the old mongrel after the car like bloody hell, and all the populace shouting and laughing, and the old tin box clattering along the street.
You never saw the like of it in all your born pup.
Gob, if he got that lottery ticket on the side of his pole, he'd remember the gold cup he would so. But be gob, the citizen would have been lagged for assault and battery, and Joe for aiding and abetting.
The Jarvie saved his life by furious driving, as sure as God made Moses.
What? Ah, Jesus, he did. And he let a volley of oaths after him.
Did I kill him, says he?
Or what?
And he's shouting to the bloody dog, after him, Gary! After him, boy!
And the last we saw was the bloody car round in the corner, an old sheep face on it gesticulating. And the bloody mongrel after it, with his lugs back for all he was bloody well worth, to tear him limb from limb. 100 to 5. Jesus, he took the valley over out of him, I promise you. When lo, there came about them all a great brightness, and they beheld the chariot wherein he stood ascend to heaven. And they beheld him in the chariot, clothed upon in the glory of the brightness, having raiment as of the sun. Fair as the moon, and terrible, that for awe they durst not look upon him. And there came a voice out of heaven, calling, Elijah! Elijah! And he answered with a main cry, Abba! Adonai! And they beheld him, even him, Ben Bloom Elijah, amid clouds of angels, ascend to the glory of the brightness at an angle of 45 degrees over Donahue's in Little Green Street, like a shot off a shovel.